For people with disabilities, this shift has been especially challenging. That's because inconsistent accessibility features on these platforms have not always made it possible to communicate. We are changing this today. We start by clarifying that under the 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act, interoperable video conferencing services must comply with accessibility rules.
The FCC takes steps to make video conferencing more accessible to people with disabilities. Also, next-gen 911, robocalls, and new millimeter wave spectrum. All of that coming up.
REC, FCC Today, BG Bradley.
This is FCC Today, the podcast for Thursday, June 8, 2023. We will have coverage of today's FCC open meeting in just a bit, but for now, a couple of housekeeping items from REC Networks. REC Networks is receiving inquiries about a future LPFM filing window by telephone, email, and through text messaging on a phone number that cannot easily respond to text messages. REC is asking anyone who is interested in starting a new LPFM station to visit lpfm.app to get more information about the service, check for availability, and put your name on a show of interest list. We will be contacting people soon. While recent FCC actions in the NCE filing window have lightened the workload on staff, the FCC has not yet announced when or if there will be a filing window for new low-power FM stations. Stay with all REC Networks channels for details. Once again, the website is lpfm.app, Alpha Papa Papa. This weekend, REC will be conducting maintenance on fccdata.org, mainly in the U.S. broadcast section. During this time, you may experience outages, error messages, or other strange results. Please be patient with us and use the system status information at recnet.com for updates on system maintenance activities. We expect no long-term full outages from this work. The FCC held their June open meeting today. Subjects ranged from next generation 911 to expanding access to video conferencing for people with disabilities. The FCC voted today to adopt a notice of proposed rulemaking to advance the transition to next generation 911 service. NG 911 will upgrade the current 911 system from a more traditionally circuit switched network, such as the way the telephone system has been running for decades, to an internet protocol or IP-based system. The IP-based system will allow for better connectivity to public safety answering points, especially from newer technologies such as voice over IP telephone service and internet-based telecommunications relay services. The proposed rules will also address issues around the allocation of costs and who would pay so the various providers can interconnect with the NG 911 system. Here's Rachel Ware from the FCC's Public Safety and Homeland Security Bureau to tell us more about it.
To advance the transition to NG 911, this notice of proposed rulemaking proposes to address what must be delivered to 911 authorities, where it must be delivered, and how costs are allocated for delivery of 911 calls in an NG 911 environment. With respect to what must be delivered, the notice of proposed rulemaking proposes that upon receiving a valid request from a state or local 911 authority that has the capability to accept IP-based communications, providers of wireline, interconnected voice over internet protocol, and internet-based telecommunications relay service must deliver 911 calls, including associated location information, in IP-based format. This is similar to the requirement proposed for wireless and covered text providers in the pending wireless 911 location-based routing rulemaking that the Commission initiated last December. With respect to where this information must be delivered, the notice of proposed rulemaking proposes that wireline, wireless, interconnected VoIP, and internet-based telecommunications relay service providers must transmit 911 calls to the destination points designated by a state or local 911 authority. Regarding the allocation of costs, the notice proposes that all originating service providers, including wireless, wireline, interconnected VoIP, and internet-based telecommunications relay service providers, would be presumptively responsible responsible for covering the cost of transmitting 911 calls to the points designated by a 911 authority, including costs associated with delivering the information in IP-based format, unless the state has established an alternative cost allocation mechanism.
The FCC also voted to adopt a notice of proposed rulemaking that would make it easier for customers to decide which robocalls and robotexts they wish to receive. From the Consumer and Governmental Affairs Bureau, here's Christy Thornton, acting chief of the Consumer Policy Division.
First, the NPRM proposes to codify and strengthen the Commission's 2015 ruling confirming that callers who have provided prior express consent to receive auto-dialed and pre-recorded voice calls may revoke such consent through any reasonable means. The NPRM proposes a rule that consumers have the right to revoke prior express consent in any reasonable manner. It proposes to strengthen the right by saying callers and texters must honor any attempt to revoke that clearly expresses a desire not to receive further calls or text messages. The NPRM proposes to require callers and texters to honor consumer revocation when they use words such as stop, revoke, end, or opt out, and would prohibit callers from infringing on that right by designating exclusive means to revoke consent that preclude the use of any reasonable method. Moving from words to methods, the NPRM proposes to empower consumers to revoke consent by text message, voicemail, or email to any telephone number or email address at which the consumer can reasonably expect to reach the caller. Second, the NPRM proposes to require that robocallers and robotexters must honor revocation of consent request within 24 hours of receipt. This protection would apply to calls and texts subject to our consent requirements, including company-specific do not call lists. The proposal would tighten the Commission's current requirements that allow up to 30 days to honor do not call requests in some instances and establish no deadlines at all in other instances. Third, the NPRM proposes to allow consumers to specify the types of calls and texts they no longer want from a particular caller or texter. Fourth, the NPRM proposes to, for the first time, enable wireless customers to opt out of receiving robocalls and robotext from their provider. The NPRM proposes, in response to petitions filed with the Commission, to bring the current broad exemption for wireless providers in line with exemptions in other areas by limiting the number of calls and texts providers can send their customers every 30 days and giving their customers, for the first time, the ability to opt out of all such communications.
The FCC has also voted to adopt a report and order that would state that the accessibility requirements of Section 716 of the Communications Act and Part 14 of the rules also apply to all services and equipment meeting the definition of an interoperable video conferencing service, or IVCS. Examples include Zoom and Microsoft Teams. This will assure that those with disabilities can have better access to these types of service. More information from Bob Aldrich, legal chief of the Consumer and Governmental Affairs Bureau.
The report and order would allow IVCS providers 1 year from its effective date to bring their services into compliance with Part 14. The notice of proposed rulemaking would propose to amend Part 14 of the Commission's rules to add specific performance objectives for enhancing the accessibility of interoperable video conferencing services, including the provision of speech-to-text capabilities, text-to-speech capabilities, and support for American Sign Language interpreting. The notice would also seek comment on whether other performance objectives are needed, for example, to address other types of disabilities or to control the activation and appearance of accessibility features, and whether technical standards should be available as safe harbors. In addition, the notice would propose that the Interstate TRS Fund can be used to support the integrated provision of relay service in video conferences without connecting via a dial-up telephone call. The notice would seek comment on amending the TRS rules to facilitate the integration of TRS with video conferencing, ensure appropriate use of TRS with video conferencing, and prevent waste, fraud, and abuse. On a related issue, the notice would propose a rule amendment to clarify when multiple communications assistants may be assigned to TRS calls that involve users of different forms of TRS. Finally, the order would partially waive for all video relay service, or VRS, providers for 1 year, subject to conditions, a rule that restricts VRS users' ability to turn off their video cameras when not actively participating in a video conference. This rule was originally adopted to prevent fraud on VRS calls, But as we have all learned in the past 3 years, there are multiple reasons why video conference participants may choose to turn off their cameras.
Finally, the FCC voted to adopt a notice of proposed rulemaking to consider how to use the spectrum between 42.0 and 42.5 gigahertz. This spectrum is unique because right now there are no incumbent federal or non-federal users in this band. The FCC wants to explore creative ways of handling the licensing and the use of this spectrum, as outlined from Catherine Schroeder, Senior Attorney Advisor in the Wireless Telecommunications Bureau.
This notice of proposed rulemaking would seek comment on how a shared licensing approach might be deployed in the 42 gigahertz band to lower barriers to entry for smaller or emerging wireless service providers, encourage competition, and prevent spectrum warehousing. The item would seek comment on three specific potential shared licensing models, as well as any other shared licensing models proposed by commenters. First, the item would seek comment on a nationwide non-exclusive licensing model in which licensees would apply for a license with the commission and then coordinate and register specific deployment sites with a third-party database administrator. Second, the item would explore a site-based licensing approach in which licensees would apply for each deployment site directly with the commission. Third, the item would seek comment on a technology-based sensing approach in which operators would employ certain technologies to avoid harmful interference from one another without the use of a registration database. The item would also seek comment on other aspects of possible shared licensing approaches, including coordination mechanisms, first-in-time protections, build-out requirements, and potential synergies with the sharing approaches being considered for the lower 37 gigahertz band at 37 to 37.6 gigahertz. The item would seek comment on whether the 42 gigahertz band should be subject to the same license terms and technical rules as the existing Part 30 UMFUS bands, which are used for other millimeter wave bands in nearby frequency ranges, such as 39 gigahertz, or whether adopting a shared licensing approach would necessitate different rules. The item would also propose to license the 42 gigahertz band as 5 100 megahertz channels. Finally, the item would propose to protect adjacent radio astronomy services in the 42.5 to 43.5 gigahertz band by requiring that operators in the 42 gigahertz band comply with a spectral power flux density limit at radio astronomy sites.
Comment deadline dates for these proceedings will be announced at a later date. The next FCC open meeting is scheduled for Thursday, July 20, which is ironically also the 39th anniversary of the creation of REC Networks. We should know more about the agenda of that meeting around June 29th, unless Chair Rosenworcel gives us some clues beforehand. Stay tuned. The Disaster Information Reporting System remains activated for Guam. In the past 24 hours, we have seen the percentage of downed cell sites decrease from 36 to 33%, and 792 cable and wireline customers have been restored. No changes to broadcast station status, with one AM station, two FM stations, one FM translator, and one TV station reported as being silent.
FCC Today,
the podcast, has been a production of REC Networks, always on at recnet.com. The podcast is available through Podbean, TuneIn, Apple Podcasts, iHeart, and on the Michelle Bradley YouTube channel. If you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe to this channel. Hit the notification dinger to be informed of new episodes. Keep up to the minute with events around the Media Bureau at fcc.today. If you need assistance with an FM broadcast facility, LPFM, full service, or translator, call 202-621-2355. I'm Michelle Bradley, KU3N, SBE Certified Broadcast Technologist. We'll be back on Monday. See you then.
REC.